percent of the electorate, 65 million people, and we cannot tiptoe around these issues. The Economic Policy Institute has said we lose $1 trillion a year from child poverty alone, and it's not just one little piece of
policy.
We have
10 seconds.
We need full reconstruction of the society to deal with economic injustice, and it must happen now.
Reverend Dr. William Barber, we thank you for being with us, co-chair of the Poor People's Campaign, president of Repairers of the Breach, speaking to us from Elizabeth City, North Carolina, where demands will be made in the case of the police killing of Andrew Brown. That does it for our broadcast. Happy birthday to Tamari Astudio. Democracy Now! Produced with Renee Feltz, Mike Burke, Dina Guzder, Nermeen Sheikh, Maria Terracena. I'm Amy Goodman. Be safe.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, coming right up on 5 p.m. KBOO, we would like to thank all of those folks who have helped us out with our spring membership drive so far. We just came off of Democracy Now! There. You know, KBOO has brought Democracy Now! To Portland, the Valley, and the Gorge for years now. And obviously, from such a great show, it brings invaluable perspective to the airwaves. So to help support programs like Democracy Now!, you can give to KBOO today by going to kboo.fm/give. You can text KBOO to 44321. You can also mail us a check. We do still have a physical location, and that's 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland, Oregon, zip code 97214. We would love to have your support. That's kboo.fm/give. And thank you so much to everyone who's helped us out so far.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. Due to the temporary closure of in-station activity at KBOO, meetings will be conducted online via public video conferencing unless otherwise noted. A public link and phone number to attend the meetings are available on our website. The Development and Events Committee meets on the fourth Monday of the month at 4:30 p.m. Please visit our website at kboo.fm to verify if a meeting is being held.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Governor Kate Brown has announced a $1 million lottery incentive to encourage Oregon residents to get vaccinated. Community, civic, and faith leaders announced a march against murder this Saturday. And Oregon officially designates the second Monday in October as Indigenous Peoples Day. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, May 21st, 2021. I'm Nat Moon. Yesterday, in response to a record increase in homicides, a group of Portland community, faith, and civic leaders announced plans to hold a march against murder this weekend. The march is scheduled to start at 1 p.m. on Saturday at Peninsula Park and conclude at Woodlawn Park. At a news conference, members of Portland's Black community spoke about the unprecedented surge in gun violence throughout the city. Royal Harris, a program director for the Multnomah County Health Department and one of the organizers of the march, said, quote, "This is a problem with American culture, romanticizing violence as conflict resolution. Portland has had 33 homicides this year, including one police shooting, and four people have died in the city in the last week and a half. In addition to the deaths, over 125 others have been wounded in more than 400 shootings so far this year. Portland's record for homicides was set in 1987 when 70 people died, but at the current pace, this year may pass that grim total." Antoinette Edwards, who retired in 2019 as the director of the city's Office of Youth Violence Prevention, and J.W. Matt Hennessy, pastor of the Vancouver First Avenue Baptist Church, also spoke at the news conference yesterday. Hennessy's stepson was shot and killed last week near a food cart pod on Northeast 118th Avenue. Portland Mayor Ted Wheeler, Police Chief Chuck Lavelle, and Deputy District Attorney Kirsten Snowden also attended the news conference. Saturday's event will feature several speakers, including Herman Green, a pastor and recently elected Portland Public School Board member, and Lakayana Drury of the leadership program Word is Bond. Five counties in Oregon will be moved into the low coronavirus risk level category today. Benton, Deschutes, Hood River, Lincoln, and Washington counties are now eligible to drop many of their restrictions. These five counties have now confirmed that at least 65% of residents over age 16 have received at least one vaccine dose. The low-risk category permits counties to have bigger public and private gatherings and allows bars and restaurants to remain open until midnight. Multnomah County has also reached the vaccine benchmark but did not submit the required equity plan in time to qualify for this round. It'll be moved to the low-risk category on May 28th. County Chair Deborah Kafouri noted that Multnomah had spent extra time to get the equity plan right and asked the governor to allow the state's most populous county to move into the lower-risk category as soon as the Oregon Health Authority approves the plan. In a statement, she said, quote, "We look forward to reopening, allowing businesses to get back on their feet, and people to reconnect." Yesterday, the health authority reported 603 new cases of COVID-19 and 5 new deaths. At a noon press conference today, Governor Kate Brown announced that the Oregon Health Authority was teaming up with the state lottery to provide a financial incentive encouraging residents to get the COVID-19 vaccine. The governor started the briefing by noting that COVID hospitalizations are at the lowest level since April, and that 63% of the state's adults have so far received at least a single vaccine dose. But to reach the 70% vaccination rate necessary to fully reopen the economy, additional steps are required. She then introduced the Take Your Shot, Oregon incentive.
So if you've been waiting to get a vaccine, or you just haven't gotten around to it yet, we're going to give you an extra incentive. How about a chance to win $1 million? Take your shot, Oregon. Roll up your sleeves and get a chance to change your life. We are encouraging all eligible Oregonians to get vaccinated for the chance to win money and education scholarships.
There will be one winner of $1 million for residents 18 and older, five $100,000 Oregon College Savings Plan scholarship winners aged 12 to 17, and each of the state's 36 counties will have an individual $10,000 scholarship winner. Oregon is the third state to implement a cash incentive to encourage vaccination following Ohio and Maryland. In her remarks, Brown stressed the health benefits as well as the accessibility of vaccines at this point.
Getting vaccinated not only protects you from COVID-19, it helps protect your loved ones. It takes us one step closer to unlocking the restrictions we have endured during the pandemic. And right now, getting vaccinated is easier than it's ever been. Local public health and community-based organizations are partnering with healthcare providers to improve access to our most vulnerable neighbors. There are pharmacies, community clinics, and medical offices across the state that have available appointments. For example, just this week, the Oregon Convention Center, one of our mass vax sites, celebrated that they have given 500,000 shots. You can walk in and get a vaccine even without an appointment.
The deadline for vaccination is June 27th, with a drawing on June 28th. The drawing is open to all residents who, during that time, become vaccinated. Beginning this year, Oregon will officially recognize Indigenous Peoples Day. On Tuesday, the Senate passed House Bill 2526, making Oregon the 11th state to formally recognize the holiday. The Senate vote was 22-7 and had passed in the House by a vote of 50-5 in April. Oregon does not formally observe Columbus Day as a state holiday, but it has been observed nationally since 1937. Republican Senate Minority Leader Fred Giroud of Staten didn't approve of language in the bill that disparaged Columbus and spoke against the bill and voted no, saying, quote, "That was a very brave individual that got in a boat to prove a theory that the world was round." But historians agree that the fact that the world was round had been well established long before Columbus, and that sponsorship by the King and Queen of Spain clearly indicated financial reward was his motive. And historians have long argued against the idea that Columbus discovered North America. The continent was already home to millions of people. The bill was sponsored by Indigenous lawmakers Representative Tana Sanchez of Portland and Representative Teresa Alonzo Leon of Woodburn. In a statement of support, Majority Leader Rob Wagner said, quote, "Indigenous people, language, and cultures contribute incredible richness and vitality to the tapestry of the place we now call Oregon." Advocates for preserving the high desert of southeastern Oregon have sent a letter to Interior Secretary Deb Haaland, urging the Biden administration to consider protections for part of Oregon's Owyhee Canyonlands. For more on the story, here's Eric Tegedoff of the Oregon News Service.
A letter to Interior Secretary Deb Haaland urges her to preserve 1.2 million acres of southeastern Oregon, including parts of the Owyhee Canyonlands and Sagebrush Sea. The area was identified as having wilderness characteristics by the Local Resource Advisory Council and the Bureau of Land Management District Office in an update to the region's resource management plan. But in 2019, the Trump administration advanced a plan that didn't protect any of the land. Julie Weichel, who was on the advisory council, says even some Oregonians aren't aware of how special the landscape is.
Those who do meet it or have met it in the 25 years or so that I've been showing it to some select people are astonished that we have something so grandiose right here in the southeast corner of our state.
The roughly 1,400 people and groups that signed the letter want the BLM to re-examine the resource plan before signing off on it. The Trump administration had said other management alternatives would be more costly for the agency. Jim Hammett, a retired superintendent of the John Day Fossil Beds National Monument, says the BLM under the former president didn't weigh recreation and conservation as highly as other interests.
They were mostly interested in maximizing commodity uses, grazing, you know, any future for mining, electrical transmission lines, that sort of thing. And that became the focus of the preferred alternative.
Hammett says the sagebrush habitat of southeastern Oregon has been devastated by wildfires and invasive species. And while those factors can't be fully controlled, a revised plan that does more to protect the landscape is something the BLM can control. The letter to Haaland starts off by thanking her for committing the agency to preserve 30% of the nation's land and water by 2030. Weichel notes protecting this landscape in southeastern Oregon could play a role.
We're talking a huge chunk that could go a long ways to satisfying the requirements of the 30 by 30.
Support for this reporting was provided by the Pew Charitable Trust. For Oregon News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
With all of Oregon's counties at some level of drought alert, the Oregon Public Utilities Commission has established new rules to reduce the risk of wildfires. The temporary rules govern preemptive blackouts that utility providers can implement to prevent wildfires, and they were implemented as a result of the disastrous 2020 wildfire season that destroyed nearly a million acres, leveled thousands of homes and businesses, and resulted in 9 deaths. The rules still leave the final decision in the hands of the utility companies, but create a set of requirements for reporting to state regulators when their equipment is implicated in the start of a wildfire or impacted by a fire. The new rules immediately apply to Idaho Power, PacifiCorp, and Portland General Electric, and were adopted in preparation for the 2021 wildfire season, which began last Saturday in some areas of the state. The rules are similar to those already in place in California and define requirements around public education and notifications, outreach to vulnerable populations, and follow-up reporting. Utility companies have pointed out that because of the potential impact on communications, vulnerable communities, and agencies responding to wildfires, shutting off power is a difficult decision and a last resort. Calling the rules, quote, extremely important and timely, Commissioner Latha Tawney noted that this is the earliest official opening of the Oregon wildfire season in 40 years. The temporary rules will remain in place until mid-November. The state legislature has decided that it's up to the voters to decide if healthcare is a right for Oregonians. On Wednesday, Senate Joint Resolution 12 passed the House in a party-line vote of 34 to 23. It had passed in the Senate in March and does not require the governor's signature to go on the 2020 ballot. If it's approved by voters, the resolution would amend the state's constitution to declare that Oregon has an obligation to, quote, ensure that every resident of Oregon has access to cost-effective, clinically appropriate, and affordable health care as an essential right. But the resolution also goes on to say that the effort to provide access to health care must be balanced with other state funding obligations, such as schools and essential public services. Democrats stressed that the resolution does not specifically commit the state to a specific financial action. Andrea Salinas, Democrat of Lake Oswego, reminded fellow representatives that, quote, nothing in this resolution obligates the state to provide health care or to serve as the payer. Republicans questioned the value of the resolution. House Republican leader Christine Drazen of Canby said, quote, either this is aspirational and we should vote on it today as such, but not send it to voters to enshrine it in our constitution, or it is an obligation of the state. She raised concerns that it opens the state up to lawsuits and could impact funding to other critical services. Approximately 6% of Oregon's adult population is currently uninsured, and estimates are that it could cost as much as $4 billion per year to provide coverage to everyone under the Oregon Health Plan. The plan is jointly funded by the state and federal government. You're listening to the KABU Evening News. Coming up next, at 5:30, it's Counterspin. At 6, it's Let's Talk About Race. Then at 7, it's Rising Up with Sana Lee. Tonight it will be clear with overnight temperatures dipping into the high 40s. And tomorrow we'll see a mix of clouds and sun with a high in the low 70s. On this day in 1932, Amelia Earhart became the first woman and the second person to fly solo across the Atlantic Ocean. She was the first person to fly across both the Atlantic and Pacific Oceans. Today's quote is from Amelia Earhart, who said, quote, never interrupt someone doing something you said couldn't be done, and, quote, there's more to life than being a passenger. Yesterday, under growing international pressure, Israel and Hamas agreed to a ceasefire, and Senator Bernie Sanders introduced a resolution to stop a weapons sale to Israel. With more on that story and others, here's Mary Sherman with 2021 Talks.
Welcome to 2021 Talks, where we are following our democracy in historic times.
These hostilities have resulted in the tragic deaths of so many civilians, including children.
After 2 weeks of violence in Gaza, President Joe Biden praised the ceasefire Egypt brokered between Israel and Hamas. The truce comes with growing pressure here and abroad to end the conflict. Earlier yesterday, Senator Bernie Sanders of Vermont introduced a resolution to block a $735 million weapons sale to Israel. And in the House, freshman Democrat Jamal Bowman stressed the need for humanitarian aid.
I've heard directly from my constituents in New York's 16th District. Parents with children living in both Israel and Palestine have written in, and their fear for children's safety is palpable. Their voices are with me today and have made this situation personal.
The clash has left at least 12 Israelis and 230 Palestinians dead. A Senate hearing focused on Biden's plan to withdraw the last 13,000 troops from Afghanistan. Defense officials say terrorism there has come down dramatically since 2001. Virginia Democrat Tim Kaine argued now it's up to the Afghan people.
It can't be worth more to us than it is to them. And that's kind of a painful thing to say. It's kind of a cold, tough thing to say. But success in Afghanistan can't mean more to the United States than it means to the Afghans. And at the end of the day, I believe it won't.
Former President George W. Bush on Thursday said he's worried the removal of U.S. troops will create a vacuum in the region. Bipartisan legislation now before both chambers will boost financial support for victims of the mysterious directed energy attacks targeting U.S. personnel here and abroad. Victims report severe headaches, ringing and pressure in the ears, and even long-term brain damage. A $1.9 billion bill to increase capital security in the wake of the January 6 attack passed the House by just one vote. Some progressives pulled support at the last minute, reportedly over concerns about funding police. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Rashida Tlaib, and Jamal Bowman voted present, and Ilhan Omar, Cori Bush, and Alana Presley voted no. All Republicans voted against the bill, arguing it was not bipartisan. Republican Jamie Herrera Butler of Washington argued the spending should await an overhaul of the Capitol Police Board she says was promised months ago.
I'm being told that if I don't vote for this, somehow I'm not standing behind our men and women in blue when the House Administration Committee should have led the way with the Honoré report. It was put out months ago, could have put these reforms in place, could have told us how this money would be spent. But they didn't.
Citing concerns about security and integrity, Arizona's Secretary of State recommended that Maricopa County officials replace all voting machines turned over to the private contractor for a 2020 election audit. The executive director of Cyber Ninja, the firm used for the audit, had posed conspiracy theories about the Arizona results in social media posts, which have since been deleted. For Pacifica Network and Public News Service, I'm Mary Sherman. Thanks for listening.
The Respect Act has been proposed as a way to ensure consultation between government agencies and tribes on legislation that potentially impacts Indigenous people. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News, the daily newscast dedicated to Indigenous news, issues, and culture.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Tribal legal experts weigh in on the discussion draft of the Respect Act, which involves consultation between federal agencies and tribes when it comes to government actions impacting tribal lands and interests. Lauren Van Schelfgaard, director of the Tribal Legal Development Clinic at ACLU School of Law, says robust consultation policy is needed and should include ongoing communication and institutionalized nation-to-nation relationships. She says that's good federal governance and good tribal governance.
Consultation with tribal governments, when conducted meaningfully, is nevertheless the most effective and efficient means for acknowledging and braiding tribal concerns into the vast array of projects and interests that impact tribes. Consultation is a manifestation of the nation-to-nation federal-tribal relationship. It can facilitate large-scale resource management planning, incorporating tribal concerns early and thereby limiting costly and harmful intrusions later.
Matthew Fletcher, director and professor of Indigenous Indigenous Law at Michigan State University College of Law says the Respect Act is a step in the government fulfilling its trust responsibility to tribes.
Federal tribal relations always work better as a partnership of sovereigns instead of as an adversarial relationship. Many Indian nations believe that the relationship between the United States and them and their nations is one of a familial relationship. It is not intended to be adversarial. Our current era of federal Indian policy, as it has been for the past half century or more, is that of tribal self-determination. And for that period of time, Congress and the executive branch largely have embraced this relationship. Congress and the executive branch and the United States has also embraced the trust relationship and the duty of protection that the United States owes to Indian people and to Indian tribes.
Fletcher says consultation must also include treaty rights, state governments when they engage in federal projects, and tribal impact statements. Lawmakers heard testimony Thursday during a virtual hearing in the U.S. House Subcommittee for Indigenous Peoples of the United States. Residents of the Red Lake Nation in Minnesota are no longer under medical martial law after more than a year of the order due to COVID-19 safety precautions. Restrictions were on travel, which was limited to essential business only. There were daily curfews, and non-members could not enter the reservation. The medical martial law was lifted by the Red Lake Tribal Council last week. Emergency restrictions eased include face masks, which will no longer be required for outdoor activities, restrictions on the number of people attending indoor activities, and non-residents entering the reservation. The Cherokee Nation in Oklahoma is offering incentives for vaccinated tribal government employees. Tribal officials hope to increase the number of employees receiving COVID-19 vaccines with a $300 incentive. Principal Chief Chuck Hoskin Jr. recently signed an order providing a vaccine reward and incentive program for the more than 4,000 tribal government employees. The order does not apply to Cherokee Nation businesses or other entities. As of this week, about 40% of tribal government employees were vaccinated. Hoskin says they're hoping to increase those numbers to 70% to help protect the tribe employees and elders from COVID-19. The Cherokee Nation expects to issue the incentives in June. The vaccine rewards will continue through the end of 2021. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Conservative states have filed a lawsuit over federal guidelines that require corporations to factor the costs of climate change into their policy decisions. Many experts think that companies have no choice but to consider climate change in their business plans. For more on the story, here's Mike Moen with the Public News Service.
South Dakota is part of a multi-state lawsuit over federal regulators being asked to weigh the costs of climate change on society in their policy decisions. A nonprofit in the corporate arena says it's clear resistance on behalf of businesses is futile. The lawsuit by conservative states argues the federal action is arbitrary and could have harmful effects on the U.S. economy. Danielle Fougere heads the group As You Sow, which focuses on shareholder activism. She says it's a market reality that the world is taking climate change seriously. She thinks businesses should join the movement instead of putting up a fight.
Because as climate change occurs, it impacts every company globally. It makes it much more difficult to maintain business.
She suggests investors and banks are paying close attention to which companies adapt and which ones ignore the warning signs. As for the federal policy, Governor Kristi Noem and other opponents say it could stifle energy production. They're also concerned about the impact on sectors such as agriculture, which has been a key priority for Noem. But Fougere says this week's report from the International Energy Agency, which says fossil fuel investment can't play a role in achieving net zero emissions, is a wake-up call. She says businesses, especially oil and gas producers, need to see what other firms have already noticed.
They need to have resources available. They need workers available. They need water. And they need agriculture that works.
She says without that stability, it would be harder for businesses to thrive. Her group adds many leading banks have set their own net zero goals and have decided the companies they finance must be on that path as well in order to secure loans. Mike Moen, Public News Service.
You're You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Friday, May 21st, 2021. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our remote production team for tonight's newscast is Ray Bodwell, Antonia Gonzalez, Mike Moen, Mary Sherman, Nadia Ramlagan, and Eric Tegedoff. The producer is Ray Bodwell, and our engineer is Otto. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Nat Moon. All of our KBOO programs, including the evening news, are made possible by support from our wonderful members. KBOO is currently in our spring membership drive. If you'd like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321.
The time is 5:30. You are listening to KBOO Portland. And that's right, we are in our final stretch of our spring membership drive. It ends tomorrow. And now is a great time to donate, to get involved, and to help us reach our goal. We have about $500 to get to $48,000 of our $60,000 goal. We'd love to have your help. And coming up next is going to be counting.